Coming up next on This Week in Google, I'm Jason Howell, joining Jeff Jarvis and Stacey Higginbotham. We talk about a whole lot of random Google. Basically, Bill Nye is hawking Chromebooks, the Pixel boss got a new job, incognito mode is still in publishers' crosshairs, gestures, are they the way to go, or maybe something else, maybe the three buttons, and what exactly is the purpose of YouTube mods? All that and more coming up next on This Week in Google.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 521, recorded Wednesday, August 14th, 2019. Bill Nye, the Chromebook Guy. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Protect your online privacy with one click. Yes, it's that easy. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/twig. And by Worldwide Technology. Worldwide Technology's advanced technology center is like no other testing and research lab, with more than $500 million of equipment, including OEMs like NetApp. And it's virtual, so you can access it 24/7. To learn more and get insights into all that it offers, go to wwt.com/twit. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. I'm Jason Howell, filling in for Leo Laporte, who is on the East Coast right now at the podcast movement there throughout the week. So I'm happy to be here. I always love joining. Joining me today, of course, Stacey Higginbotham, creator of the IoT Podcast at IoTpodcast.com and the Internet of Things newsletter, Stacey on IoT.com. How you doing, Stacey?
I'm doing well. Thank you,
Jason. Yeah, it's good to see you again. And then, I have this sheet that John gave me to introduce our other esteemed host, Jeff Jarvis.
Memorized.
Yeah, I don't have this memorized. The Leonard Tow Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York and the director of the Tow Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. That happens every time, right? Every time you do the show with Leo?
No. Oh, okay. Just when he wants to make fun of me.
Oh, okay.
And he calls me a former TV guide critic.
That is impressive. Whatever I just read, I don't understand a word of it. Whatever it is, that's impressive.
It's fine. It's nice people give us money to do things, which is great.
Right on. Good to see you guys again. Let's see here. And, of course, we have Karsten on the ones and twos back there.
Hello.
He's on the turntables.
Wait, what does the Karsten ones and twos mean?
Zeros and ones, I guess, would be more technologically appropriate. But the ones and twos, like if you're going out to the club, you got turntable number one and turntable number two. They're the ones at the twos. That's Karsten.
Is that who I am?
Okay. Yes. Okay, maybe
you
not.
Two turntables and a microphone?
Yes, basically. Something like that.
I have 7 million buttons and a microphone.
Yeah, 7 million glowing buttons. Where do we begin as relates to Google this year? Did you guys read it's on Wired, the piece about 3 years of misery inside of Google, the happiest company in technology? Natasha Tiku wrote this feature for Wired. She spoke with 47 Google employees, past and present, to kind of get a sense of the temperature and the everything that's happened over the last 3 years, all the changes that Google's gone through. And I don't know, I thought it was just a fascinating kind of look, insider look at how Google has maneuvered some of the fires and everything that I think, initially Google's been a very ideological company, very open to sharing perspectives and keeping the company as open and welcoming as possible. And the last 3 years have forced Google into many different corners where it's really challenged that ethos. And the article does a great job walking through it.
It does. And it also it does a good job of pointing out what I imagine is kind of a microcosm of many things, what's happening at many companies since.
For sure.
The Trump presidency, with kind of the polarization of society. And, Google is just getting it worse because probably its role it plays as a platform, the culture it has about being yourself and speaking out, that a lot of tech kind of companies have. So I don't know. And also that whole don't be evil thing that I know it's abandoned, but still is associated with Google.
Yeah, whether Google wants to shake it or not, whether they think they're moving on from that or not, that will always follow them around. And maybe it should. Maybe it helps to kind of keep them honest as far as that's concerned. But anyways, if you haven't read the article, it's a long piece. It's a feature piece for Wired, so it's going to take some time to get through. But it really kind of focuses on, you know, James Damore and the kind of shift that forced, or rather, I think what that did is that kind of illustrated the voices inside Google weren't as, you know, as all on the same side of the page as maybe even Google imagined it was. And, you know, all of the internal kind of message boards and the activity happening there and that, you know, finally there were eventually people from the inside who were willing to kind of go to war against Google from the inside and make all that stuff public, and how that's forced Google to kind of change its ways. And I don't know. It's not an easy problem for Google, I think.
I don't think it's an easy problem for the country.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're going to be real, I think this is a...
Yeah.
This is happening everywhere. But yes. Yeah. And they get it worse because, well, you kind of see the same thing. If they could figure this out internally, they probably could apply it across... They could use those insights to, you know, help, I don't know, deal with YouTube results and filter various other services, so we get less like reactive and content designed to, I don't know, engage people in things like white supremacy and less reflective thought. I'm kind of babbling. I'm going to stop.
Let's move on. Let's move on from this story. It's probably a better read than anything. So go ahead and check it out. Let's see here. Any competitive stuff? Like, when I was going through the rundown for this, I was like, what is like the major Google news right now? And I feel like I'm having a really hard time pointing my finger on like what major has happened with Google this last week. So I feel like it's a bunch of little random pieces here and there.
It's August. That's what happens in August. And I would say, like, I would love, I don't know if Jeff's really excited to do this, but I wanted to talk about the search engine auction, mostly because I don't understand it.
Yeah. All right. Let's do that.
I don't fully understand it either, because there's an angle in here. There's a weird twist in here, which is that the regulators came after them and said, you just can't, you know, do it on your own or decide what to do on your own. So you have to do something. And it has value. It's not like they should give it away. Right? It has big value.
We should start with what's actually happening, because I think we talked about it a little last week, and this is over in the EU.
Yeah. Yeah. So they announced last week, Google announced last week, in response to the whole $5 billion fine by the EU, was part of the antitrust violation ruling, that it would hold closed auctions for search engines that want to be included in this new like search provider pop-up or whatever happens in Android phones when this
very
is pushed
similar,
out.
It's very similar to if people remember Microsoft's browser ballot.
Right. Very similar.
You get a list when you first, very first download and open Chrome, you get a list of which, who do you want to be your search provider? Mm-hmm. Do you want Google? Do you want DuckDuckGo? And so Google has decided to have an auction for like the top however many slots on this thing, strangely enough, its competitors are somewhat averse to paying them to be on this list.
Right. Yeah. Ecosia is one of the browsers, and they are calling it unethical, anti-competitive in itself.
DuckDuckGo is also
DuckDuckGo is also
the first one you just listed. I'm amused. Right. They're so European. They use much of their profits to plant trees.
Right, right.
So they're mad.
So when you first open Chrome, this pop up will show up.
they could pay in carbon credits.
That would be cool.
I'm sorry. Google does want to get credit. We just got to think about what has value.
Yeah,
carbon credits have value. Okay, keep going. I'm sorry.
No kidding. It's true. Yeah, so that would appear. And Google said when it announced this news, it would take the top three bidders in any given market. And, you know, basically those top three bidders would end up in that menu by default, ordered at random. Google thinks that that's a fair solution because, as you mentioned, this sort of selection has some sort of value. Browsers like Ecosia and DuckDuckGo and definitely some of the smaller players in the field are saying that this just kind of pushes them out of contention, right? The bigger search engines with the money that they're making can't compete with a browser like Ecosia that is like an alternative that focuses on privacy and special causes, especially, like you said, planting trees in the case of Ecosia. So they can't
explain
compete.
This to me too, Carsten. This is... So Google can't be the default search anymore. The user every time has to pick a default search engine?
Is this only if you opt out of Google? This is when you first download Chrome in the EU.
When you're setting up your Android phone.
Exactly. You'll get this.
And so Google just de facto is not the default choice.
Exactly.
Mm-mm. I think that's kind of ridiculous on its face. But
the EU disagrees with you.
I know. But that's a fairly major, restraint of trade for an American company on its own.
I don't know.
They did the same thing to Microsoft in the early 2000s with the browser ballot. So this is
that did all kinds of good. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is what happens when you close the door after you close the barn after the horse has gone out. Yeah.
Has hit the horse in the rear end. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I do like using alternative browsers, but sometimes, my default is always to try to use a different browser and then to go back. But, most people don't have time for that, and you really shouldn't make them.
To be clear, this is not about browsers. This is about search engines.
I'm sorry. That's what I mean. I keep saying browsers, and I'm envisioning typing.
I've seen a lot of people make that mistake, but it's not. Right. Yeah, it's very specifically if you're using Google or DuckDuckGo or Bing or one of the search engines.
Yeah, I'm curious to know how this interplays into Android. Like into the home screen and stuff. Like
you can choose on the home screen different. I was futzing around with my settings at some point in time, and I realized I can turn my search bar into a different search engine.
The Google search bar on the home screen?
Uh huh.
Oh, okay. No, you can probably do that in settings. Yeah, actually, preferences.
I'm like, no. You know how sometimes you're just messing around on your phone and you get something and you're like, whoo.
There's a reminder. No, you're absolutely right. Now that I think about it, search bar. I'm not really quite sure what that search Gport. Now
you're way ahead of me. I'm like, where is the settings icon?
Yeah.
Where did I put it?
Pull down the shade. Tap the
which way do
button.
I pull up? Yes, down, I know. Left.
Also, my search. Of settings is not working for me right now, so I'm not able to get to it. But I think you're absolutely right. There is a way to go in there and change that. Now, does each search engine have to provide something in order to appear there, or is it just?
Well, I don't know.
You know what I mean?
Literally ran across. Yeah. And I'm like, where did I find that again?
I mean, I'm just kind of curious. Like Ecosia, if they're a lower. Like if they have far less money than most other search engines, let's say, to develop these features, is this a feature that they actually need to develop in order to be compatible with it? Or is it just we have a search engine, therefore it can surface there? I'm not really quite sure. But that could be another obstacle for them, I suppose.
I do not know. Maybe it was in Google Assistant or the Google. There are so many freaking Google things. Anyway, do not get me started on that.
Indeed. So many Google things, but also antitrust related 23 job finding search sites in Europe are calling for an order by the EU to stop Google from anti-competitive behavior on that front.
What's their specific Yeah, what's their specific allegation of anti-competitive behavior?
They say that Google's job search widget, something that appears at the top of search results for relevant job search terms, is unfair when compared to the marketing investment that competitors have to spend to do the same thing. And also, you know, that it only surfaces certain job sites within that tool. Others get pushed down further, that sort of thing.
Now, of course, the consumer argument here is that Google is making it easier to find jobs directly.
Right.
And to not have to go through 40 different places, and they have the data and they do it. So this is a, you know, there's commerce involved here, but whether you're looking for, you know, when was Michael Jackson born, or you're looking for a job, there's data at the ready, and Google's philosophy is to try to get it to you more than not.
Right, right. And I think part of their complaint is, at least the sites that are calling for this order, are saying that the tool requires the sites to follow a specific format in order to be involved in this tool. And some of them, you know, might not have the capacity to build out that format or don't want to follow Google's specific format. So as a result, their site ends up lower on the results, and they don't feel that.
They've already spent all their money on SEO optimization. They don't want to spend money on getting the format right.
Right.
So this is something I've noticed about Google that is beginning to frustrate me. I think I noticed it looking for hotels the other night. It is, or maybe it was restaurants, I don't know. It's becoming more difficult to search for things like a restaurant near me or a hotel near this and get to the actual website of the entity I'm looking for. Instead, I get sent to all of the sponsors coming in various different boxes on my, and usually this is on my phone, but it happens on the computer. I was like, what is this computer thing I'm looking at? It happens on the web too. And that is getting frustrating. So I know Google needs to monetize, but I'm kind of to the point where I'm like, I just want to get to what I'm looking for, man. Mm-hmm. You know, and I want the actual source. I don't want, you know, I want to go to American Airlines website. I don't want to go to Expedia's website. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. This is just Stacey complaints about Google today.
Good.
I'm going
like
to try
it.
To find something else.
I like it. No, I like it. Keep up the complaints. There's probably plenty of ammo in here to complain about. How do you feel about this, Stacey? Incognito used to make it possible for you to go to publication sites and get free articles because you aren't identified, or you shouldn't be identified if you're running in incognito mode. And then this became like a cat and mouse game where the sites figured out how to identify you even when you're in an incognito mode, that you are in fact in incognito mode, so they would turn it off so you couldn't get the free article. Google published a change to Chrome, I think this was like a couple of weeks ago, that would allow for it again. Google says, hey, we've made it, you know, more private. So
yeah, just came out in Chrome 76.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Our overall goal is to make incognito mode a private mode. And as such, we passed the whole, our goal is not to make, you know, to give you the ability to get free articles, but that is the byproduct of being totally private and incognito, change your business. Well, now New York Times is one example of finding another way to identify users who are using incognito. So this really is just kind of like a ping pong match back and forth.
Is that is there a New York Times violation of privacy in some way there?
Well, so this, I don't know if it's a violation of privacy, but what it does do is it shows you how identifiable your digital footprint can be.
Yeah.
And I think people are just so blasé about this, but the metadata associated with your devices, the programs running on your devices, all of that comes through even if they strip your IP address, for example, they get this information. So maybe they can't identify Jeff Jarvis, but they can identify computer blah, 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 blah has shown up before. And so, and this is super common. And this is totally to be expected. I actually took from this that, dang, subscription business is super important to the Times. And apparently they're doing, I guess, a good job of converting people at the paywall. So if you have an effective paywall and you've got, I guess, one of the two national publications, you're probably doing all right.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not sure that what the New York Times is able to do through this is to identify specifically X user is using it. I think what they're able to identify is the fact that when you're running incognito mode, it changes the way the file system API is used. In this case, how much space the file system is set aside for the file system API. And so the New York Times can identify that based on the visitor. They can see what space has been set aside for this. And given that, they know that the user is using incognito and therefore block them from the article. From what
I guess it's the same as not answering the door to someone who shows up at your house in a ski mask.
Yeah, sure. Yes.
But it
might
but
be your best friend, might not be.
Right.
But the New York Times does identify an IP address and incognito mode. And I'm trying to think of circumstances in which that can be subpoenaed and of any danger. I don't know.
Right.
Nothing comes to mind.
But if it's just saying that this is a browser using incognito mode, then that's the ski mask as opposed to that's that same guy wearing the purple polka dotted ski mask, which is
and holding balloons.
Yes. Which is maybe more problematic. Yeah, I'm just going to say, if you're wearing a ski mask, I am not opening the door.
Yeah.
Period.
Safe to say. Maybe not even on Halloween. Halloween.
No, I don't know, man.
That might just be a bridge too far.
You've just ruined Halloween for me. Man.
sorry. Now I know what not to dress up as if I'm coming over and trick-or-treating at your place. Definitely not a ski mask. And my name is Jason, by the way. So my history with Friday the 13th goes way back. let's see here.
Oh, I was excited by this story.
Yeah?
Because Mario? Are we talking about?
Oh, yeah, Mario. It's a him, Mario. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Is it Quiroz? Mario Quiroz? Quiroz.
Met him, and I don't know. Quiroz.
Mr. Mario, as his friends call him, VP and GM of Pixel Smartphone Business, is apparently moving on, though staying at Google, and in fact, not just staying at Google, moving into a position working in Sundar Pichai's office. So moving on up for sure. Rick Osterloh is going to take over the Pixel Smartphone Business for now. But Mario, he's got a long legacy as far as Google's hardware is concerned, pretty much to the very beginning. He started in 2005. He was involved with Google's phone hardware since the beginning. So he started on the Nexus One.
I had one of those.
You know, I know. Wasn't it nice? Google TV.
It was a good phone.
Yeah. It had the little rolly ball down at the bottom, which I'm happy that didn't. That didn't stick around as a way of controlling our smartphones. But at the time, it was neat. But yeah, he was involved with Google TV, Chromecast, Google Wi-Fi, Google Home, Stadia. And yeah, so you were excited about this. Why?
Well, I was excited, one, because I think it helps push hardware, which always has felt like an afterthought for Google, up. It makes it feel like their hardware ventures might become more prominent and important, which I'm excited about because I think, well, part of me is excited about it and part of me is kind of sad because it could be that they're following an Apple strategy of locking people in with hardware to services. And Apple's is very much our services are locked to our hardware, so buy our hardware. Mm-hmm. Whereas Google's, I think, will be, hey, our really cool assistant offerings and other things are all going to tie together in hardware. So, you know, for an optimal service experience, you're going to want to have the hardware. But regardless, I think that's an important thing. I think having your hardware and software tied together is probably going to get more important over time and with like IoT and ambient computing, as they like to call it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Rick Osterloh overseeing the Pixel business. I'd be curious if they brought someone else in for that. I don't really know what they're going to do with Pixel. I always feel like, I don't know, do you ever?
It's okay. It's okay. Come back to us, Jeff.
Don't do what you did to the Nexus 7. Don't do it. I like my Pixels.
I don't think the Pixel's going anywhere.
I don't think they're going anywhere.
I just worry about any shift. I don't like change.
Well, and this would be a big change, right? Like the expectations for the Pixel 4 are pretty high. Google has helped with that because they've confirmed.
Well, already set in stone. Whatever that's going to be, it is, right.
Yeah, whatever it is, it is.
So does this potentially show a different strategic view, or somebody want to control a bit, or
yeah, I don't know.
If they keep Rick in there, and so they're saying at least for now. But if they make Rick in charge of all of hardware, and then they have this overarching view, you could see things. And let's have fun and go on the conspiracy train.
All right.
Remember how they're building the Fuchsia OS, which is supposed to be a browser for everything?
Yeah.
You could maybe start seeing the tie-ins across devices that Google makes that could be more fun, like your phone being able to talk directly to your assistant somehow. I know it talks to your assistant over Wi-Fi if you want, but maybe it would be more automatic. And I know some people will hate this, but It could start to kind of create these cool context clues and have things that you need follow you from device to device or pop up on the device where it matters at that moment in time.
Yeah.
And that requires a lot of integration that I don't think, I mean, God, look at what's happening right now with like G Suite and Assistant, and you're just like, bleh.
Yeah.
All of their different units, not quite on the same page. Which is the longstanding story of Google.
Yeah, and you see that coming together. I mean, actually, at the end of this month, we're going to see the end of Works with Nest because they've decided to tie all that in and give themselves a little bit more control. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, is this going to be awesome for every single end user out there? No. But is it going to make Google's life easier and also create this more unified like vision and product strategy? Probably. One hopes.
Yeah, and I think Rick does a great job. He did a great job with Motorola. I feel like I've liked what I've heard about, you know, how he's working with the hardware division, and I like the general direction of Google's hardware.
You know, when you think about it, I guess to be fair, if you're Microsoft, things take years because everybody's got to coordinate with everybody else. We've got to make all those work together. No. I mean, it actually doesn't work together, but there's a show of it. At Google, it's okay. You're doing that. We'll figure out the integration later. That's a little unfair, but not fully.
No, they do. They totally have different teams working on different things, and they put them out, and then they're like, oh, people like this. We're going to keep it, you know. Let's build a bridge.
Well, people like this. We're going to kill it, which is the other thing they do.
Right.
I feel like when more people like it, they don't kill it. It's just they don't call it. Does Jeff Jarvis like it? Kill it.
A lot of people liked Feed.
Okay, yeah.
Or Reader, sorry. Not Feed.
Now we're going to go into all that.
Yeah. It always comes back around to Reader.
I want my new Pixel Book.
Yes. With Reader.
Yes. And LTE. Yes. And LTE. Not too much.
I'm not going to be greedy. Just give me it because this one's starting to get a little wonky, and I don't want to buy a machine and then 2 weeks later find out the new machine's coming out.
Yeah.
Well, don't buy a machine until the beginning of November.
Yeah.
Yeah. You only got a couple more months. Only a couple of more months to wait for that. We're already talking about Pixels, so let's talk about the other Pixel things here. Somebody had just posted in chat, and I had missed this. That it was ScooterX posted this. If you have the original Pixel, apparently you can get up to $500 over a microphone issue that was happening with the original Pixel. The claims are now open. So if you're having some flaws with that microphone. Meanwhile, this phone is 3 years old. So not bad to get that money back.
And actually,
as far after the phone.
It's even better than that. You can... If you had one of the very first Pixel or Pixel XL phones, and you had microphone problems, you can get up to $500. If you merely owned the phone and had no problems whatsoever, you can still get $20.
Oh. yes. Oh.
So.
All right.
So.
Hey.
$20 is $20.
And it's going to take, if your labor is worth $30 an hour,
if it's worth
you're going
to
lose $10.
I'm going back through my old If I had actually bought my original Pixel,
yeah. And, yeah, there's
and,
that.
And it hadn't been given to me by Leo, I would be going through my receipts and getting that $20.
Apparently, Leo needs
tells
to go
me, Carsten, that you were looking back trying to remember whether you had bought it.
Yes,
well, in the hopes of the $20.
I was trying because I did actually physically buy it, but then but it was with the Twit company card, so.
I think Lisa would tell you to fill out the thing for the $20.
Okay, then I'll do that. I'm just trying to get. I guess I'll probably have to give the $20 to Lisa, though.
Well, yes, yeah. That's what she would say.
Okay, fine.
Yep. You'll pay for Twit lunches on yeah. Wednesday with that $20.
We'll pay for the other half.
Buy,
of Jason's
it'll
sandwich.
Buy one and yes. a half pizzas.
That's right.
Where do you buy pizzas so cheap?
Well,
I can get a good pizza for $12.
$20. Oh, yeah. You can get a whole pizza for $20 or $12.
$12.
That's
yeah,
a
yeah,
small
yeah.
Pizza.
No
small pizza.
No.
From your refrigerator,
the basic pizzeria
store?
Place, not the fancy coal-fired buffalo mozzarella place.
We
where it's like $18 for a small one. I could get a big pie. $12.
I don't think you're getting a big pie here. For $12, unless you're going to like Little Caesars or Domino's or something. Yeah.
This is Jersey, where it's a crime for restaurants not to have pasta on the menu. I
do miss Jersey Italian food.
Well, we have officially subsidized pizza in New Jersey, obviously.
All right.
Dang. I need to move to Jersey.
I know. I have yet to find a cheap food item here in the Pacific Northwest. I will tell you that. Whew. All right. But it's local, so I could eat it. It's not the salmon, you guys. Mm-mm. Okay. What else is happening?
I only ate half my sandwich. We can't be talking about food. I'm going to get too hungry and I'm going to get distracted.
So let's talk about the Pixel 4 because yeah. I kind of like I was going to buy the 3A for Carsten
okay.
and give my current phone, which is a 2, to my daughter. Mm-hmm. But then Kevin was like, "You're not going to take on Project Soli?" And I was like, "The Pixel 4.
That's what you got to wait for. Yeah, if Soli excites you, then you're waiting for the Pixel 4.
I thought you said you had bought it. You said done deal.
But then I canceled it because I got my husband was like, "We can't give her a cracked screen." So then I was like, "Oh,
why not?
Oh,
my children proudly have cracked screens."
Well, that's what I was like, and she wanted the case on mine too. Yeah, so it was a done deal, and then I canceled it because I sucked.
So your husband is basically the representative of OSHA in the family.
Actually, that's a really good point. He's always the way. Are those wires live? Did you double check?
Yeah, you see. And you crazy mom
chair?
Is putting wires all over. She's putting chips under her kid's skin. She's putting things just all over the house. She's putting wires under the bed and in the bathtub. Yeah, I get the picture now. Your husband's the responsible one.
Well, that is no one would deny that in this house. I know, Carson's like, "Stacy, curse you. I want the 3A.
Don't you already have the 3A?
I have a 3A. I was just saying it's a good phone. I like
it. I love my 3A.
I want everyone to have one.
Oh, I see.
I'm evangelizing headphone jacks is what I'm doing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know what, Carson? We'll see what the 4 has, but presuming that the 4... I know, exactly. Or a thumbprint thing, which may irritate me too. Yeah. 4 and the Pixelbook, I hope, come out at the same time. My priority is clear. I'm getting a Pixelbook, and this phone can last me, you know, quite some time. I'm trying to imagine what the feature is on the 4 that would make me say, "Oh, I gotta have it."
I do think, yeah, exactly. I want to be that guy.
I want to
be that guy on the subway going, "Ooh, look at me. I'm not even touching my phone."
Yeah, I did
just
that.
Magically.
I did
yeah.
that.
Oh.
Wow. This is what I want.
Yes.
Oh, we have to only do it one-handed.
Yes.
And I'm like, I think I want all of my windows to come open and show me what's on there, but it's not like as satisfying because it's a small screen. So
yeah,
maybe I want something
else. It just
goes
plink.
Okay. So here's the other problem I know I'm going to have.
Okay, tell me.
Oh, you had an ooh. That plays
That's okay.
over my problem. Oh, your ooh, is a higher priority than my kvetch.
Oh, well, I've already forgotten my ooh. It'll come back. Go.
Oh. So I don't know if this is true of you. Those damned faucets that you don't touch.
Yes.
It doesn't work for me. Now, we know that there's a racial bias and that it doesn't work for people of color, but it doesn't also work with people with no color like me. And so I can't, I have to go through four or five faucets to get them operating. My fear is the phone will be the same problem. It won't know that I'm there. I'll be doing this all I want.
Right.
And it won't let them there.
Somebody is, some sort of undead detecting thing.
No, hold on. Somebody is ultrasonic, I believe. Let me see what... I think it's 60 gigahertz wireless is what it uses, which means it's using wireless. It's not a photon. It's not based on color.
As long as it's not infrared, he'll
radar gesture.
Okay.
You're going to be fine.
How does the faucet work?
Well, there's probably a multitude of different types of faucets, but... Maybe it's IR. Yeah. How to touch.
I didn't do my faucet homework for this show. I failed to look that up.
I like Jeff that you bothered to ask like I would know.
You should know.
Tiny IR lights. So they are tiny IR lights. So Karsten was right.
Yep, you're right. Tiny IR.
Okay. If it's IR, then yeah, it won't work for you because you're a vampire.
Yeah.
So are we saying the faucets need solely radar? Is this where we're headed right now?
Yes.
This is the obvious, like, no-brainer application for solely is to put it into a faucet.
Yep.
I think you might be onto something.
So I will say the same frequency and radar concept is actually being put on chips, not just in solely, but in industrial automation for robots to, quote-unquote, see people. So... it is a way to give computers an understanding of the world around them. Vision, I would say it's kind of vision-y, but not actually vision. Right. So you're not far off, actually. Hmm. And if we get it in more places, then yeah, it would be super cheap. Right now, the radar, for a while, the chips were way too big.
Right.
Now they're
smaller and cute. Now what's the small enough to put
boss
phone.
There? What's the, if it's constantly looking for, if it's constantly, ding-ding.
So what it's doing, it's actually, you can do it with Wi-Fi. Anytime there's RF signals, so my hand, it's imagine the signal going through the air. Whenever
that's
it
your swimming, that's your let me see, let me guess. That's your Stacy swimming to the shore message. No, I don't know.
No, this is my frequency attenuation wave. See, here's the,
oh, that's your frequency attenuation. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, mine's a shorter wave.
It's a sine wave. Right.
Anyway, whoa, nerd. So when it hits something, it disrupts that wave. And so it sends that information back, and then the chip performs all this math, and it says, boop, there's a thing here. And this is, it's exactly how time of flight sensors work using optics, but it uses RF. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
No?
Yes. there's another signal being constantly sent out.
It sends it out. Yes, usually with the way these work, if it's not always on, which I don't know about the power constraints there, sometimes they do have something like IR or some sort of quick vision sensor. So there's a couple of companies that make quick, like, I recognize there's a person in front of me, turn on. So there are, it works in conjunction sometimes with other sensors.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually happens on your phone, believe it or not, with facial
recognition. Could it be a power drain? Or you think not?
Yes.
It could be. I mean, it all depends. Like, with power, it all depends. How do you implement it? How far do you want it to detect something? You know, how, I don't know, all kinds of things.
Yeah, like, you know, is there some sort of like a lower energy chip inside the phone that talks to, or that works in tangent with or in tandem with the Project Soli radar that can maybe lower the battery footprint on that? I don't know. I haven't heard anything about that.
Well, I mean, again, something like this, think about it, also depends on how far out you want it to measure, right? So, like, if you're only going to measure something that's really close to you, you don't need your signal to travel as far, and you don't have to care about it if it doesn't hit, like, say, like, I'm going to send it out 2 feet, and if it hits nothing, just don't send anything back, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it probably does have, like, an ultrasonic, maybe a little vision sensor. There's a lot of things out. I mean, it's kind of cool how...
Yeah, and I know that so obviously the Soli radar coming on the Pixel 4, like there's some sort of integration where that will be used in combination with the facial recognition. There's two different facial recognition cameras. So that I think the Soli tells the phone that you're pulling the phone up to your face, and so at that point it springs into action and fires off the facial recognition and that lets you in. From what I understand about the technology that we've heard so far, that's how it happens. I don't know what the battery impact. Strangely, I've not even thought about what the battery impact would be.
Soli says it uses very little energy on the Google homepage.
Okay,
but.
What is that?
You know, yeah. I'm like, arr.
Who the heck knows what that is?
I'll look at TI's radio specs.
And
y'all can talk about something else.
The Soli.
What were you geeking out searching up on last week?
I don't remember.
You were doing chip searches last week. Are you doing it again?
Well, you're asking me. I mean, like, I don't keep specs for all of the chips in the universe in my brain.
I'm gonna send your daughter a message and say, if you ever want to distract mommy, just ask some question about a chip. Yeah. Then she's gonna go into the deep end looking things up.
Frequency bands. You ask her about frequency bands.
Yeah. That'll distract her.
All right, you guys.
All right.
I absolutely love it.
Looking up my battery, my power consumption.
The fact that you have ready access to that is also in and of itself amazing.
It's just a Google search. Man, this doesn't give. I'm going to have to go deep.
We have
on
access
each.
To the world's information at our fingertips.
Technical docs. Boom.
Not if you're in Europe, you're going to have to use some off-brand search engine.
That's true, but maybe you might plant a tree in the process.
These run at super low power because they don't require a lot of amplification.
Okay.
These are running at 10 dBm. So that's actually really good. That's way less than I thought.
Yeah.
I'm still looking for watts, but I haven't gotten there yet. Okay. Keep going.
I'm going to take a break because I just realized that it's we're closing in on 50 minutes and I have not thanked a sponsor. And then we'll come back and we'll finish up with the Pixel because there are some interesting things there outside of the Soli radar. So let's take a quick break and thank the sponsor of This Week in Google. This episode is brought to you by ExpressVPN. If you believe that you're not being snooped on or that maybe nobody cares about your online data, you're wrong, because you listen to this show, you know, I hope you do, that you understand that your privacy is under attack. Hackers, governments, ISPs, they all have interests in gobbling up your data. They've all got their own plans for that data. And that's why we recommend getting the software that I trust, certainly what I use to protect my own online activity, and that's ExpressVPN. Their apps use powerful encryption to secure your data. It's all encrypted. ExpressVPN runs in the background of your computer, your phone, and you use the internet just as you normally do. You can even set it up when you install it on your computer so that when you boot up, you boot up your computer from scratch, it launches it instantly. So no matter what, you're always browsing protected. You just download the app, click to connect, and you're protected. So I don't go online without ExpressVPN. You shouldn't either. ExpressVPN is the fastest VPN we've tried. It costs less than $7 per month and comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. ExpressVPN uses new cutting-edge server technology called Trusted Server. Trusted Server actually prevents the operating system and apps from ever writing to the hard drive. It's a whole new standard of privacy and security. So it's time to stop hackers, Big Brother, and internet companies from grabbing all your data. Take back your online privacy with ExpressVPN. This is a great way to do it. VPN is an important tool in your tool belt. More and more, people are becoming wise to wanting to have some sort of control over their data, and ISPs don't always make that very easy. And that's why a VPN is so useful. So ExpressVPN is perfect for that. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 extra months free with a 1-year package at expressvpn.com/twig. That's expressvpn.com/twig. When you do that, you're going to get 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. ExpressVPN.com/twig is where you go to learn more, and we thank them for their support of This Week in Google. And it's time to take up the call that's coming in on someone's line. Who?
Oh, it's like the call is coming from inside the studio.
Yes. Who is? I really want to know who's on the other side of the phone, but we won't. We won't go there. How about instead we finish up with Pixel 4? The news this week was that there was going to be a 90 hertz refresh rate on the display. Something, they have a name for it, smooth display. So
smooth
as butter. 90 hertz. We're seeing this more and more on some phones. OnePlus 7 Pro comes to mind. These higher refresh rates. We're seeing it on some Android phones that are more like tailored for gamers. Wanting higher refresh rate.
What does that mean as a normal person who's like, why do I care about this?
Why do we care about 90 hertz refresh? It just means that the image is refreshing at a faster rate. So therefore, things like animations, movement, that sort of stuff, instead of like if you were to really slow it down, you'd see like these little frames of movement. It becomes a nice, smooth kind of movement in animations and stuff. So that at normal speed just gives a feel that things are moving smoothly, I guess. I don't know. Smooth is a great word for it.
How does it differ from frame rate?
It is frame rate.
Basically the same thing.
Oh,
it is frame rate.
Thank you, two words mean the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well then, but don't we have a limit of like 60 frames per second that limit. Okay.
Our limit is much higher than that.
Okay, great.
I don't know what our limit is.
Yeah, we haven't discovered our limit because we still aren't quite sure whether we're living in a simulation or not.
I'm sure somebody knows how
Once
fast
we
is
know
fast.
For a fact we're living in a simulation, then maybe we can find the exact refresh rate that we operate at, and it's going to break the system and our universe is going to explode. That's basically how it works.
Oh, I thought I was going to be able to bend a spoon with my mind. That's way less exciting.
Maybe. Once we know for certain that we're living in the simulation, somebody with more power than us is going to shut the simulation off. So we better not ever figure it out. That's what I'm saying.
Got it. Okay. Well, this makes me feel better. So basically, okay. I'm going to have a fancier screen that I will look smoother and better.
Supposedly. I mean, it depends on how they implement it. I think on the OnePlus 7 Pro, it has a higher refresh rate, but it's not active on all content. So you kind of have to turn it on, from what I understand. You have to turn it on certain content in order to even see the benefits of it. So I don't know if on the Pixel, it's going to be an all or nothing sort, you know, all or sometimes sort of thing.
Is that going to affect the battery life? Is that why they do it that way?
Well, it certainly could. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, it would affect battery life.
Yeah.
I'm like, if you're refreshing that fast.
If you're refreshing more, your battery is going to get impacted. They are going for a larger battery on these phones than they have in the past, from what we know. So, and I can't remember exactly how much that is. That may have been the last leak. You know, I feel like we're getting these leaks like every other day now.
Maybe we won't have to do a live unveil of the phone for
We'll have to do that too. And what else? Oh, and also new assistant features that'll be exclusive to the Pixel 4. I think that's interesting because we kind of heard hints of that at Google I/O, how they were talking about more on-device stuff and how those on-device features would be expected on the Pixel 4. So we're hearing a little bit more about that, not very much, but I'm really curious to find out what that actually translates into and kind of the hardware requirements for moving that all on device. Like assistant that works offline, that would be a pretty cool sell. You know?
It's coming.
Yeah.
They're building it. I don't know if they're going to release it or what, but yes.
You bet they're working on something like that. So yeah, more things to look forward to in the Pixel 4. You're definitely waiting for that, Stacey. Is that kind of your next?
No.
Well, my daughter's on an iPhone 6, and so they said no, we're not going to update that. So I'm like, today's phone versus do we have a release date on any of this yet? Do we know when this is coming out?
We don't have an exact date, but we know from previous events that it's sometime in October, probably.
Before Christmas.
Before Christmas, almost guaranteed.
October 2nd.
Probably
it's
October.
It's already almost September, Stacey.
Yeah.
Yeah, but her birthday is next Wednesday. So I could present my cracked old phone to her. Here you go. I'm a terrible mom.
Wow, best gift ever.
And here's some Band-Aids for you.
Give her a cracked phone, but also a screen protector for it.
Yes, it's at the very bottom. No one touches. It's just bezel.
Oh, okay, okay. Is it anyway. So far at the very bottom that you could put a case on and it would be hidden? The broken part would be hidden?
Yeah, well, it's right below the... Yeah, it's right below the speaker.
Yeah, hold it up. Let's see it.
Okay, here.
See that crack.
See? Can you see it? Okay. Right there? It's right there.
I think I can see it. Okay, so it's down... All right, so it's not in a
Maybe
place...
Maybe your husband's being a little overcautious, yeah.
Yeah, it's not in a place that a case would necessarily cover it up, because sometimes you get lucky like that. And,
because you've got to leave the microphone uncovered.
Yeah, right. It's because my beloved live case cracked on the bottom, although it saved it many other times. So, and I can't get a replacement live case. And she's like, I really want the case that goes with it. I'm like,
live cases are no more.
All right.
No more. Bill Nye, fans of Bill Nye. Apparently he's
the science guy. Yeah, you have to say the science guy.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Say his name. I'm sorry.
Bill Nye, the science guy, is apparently hawking Chromebooks now. Has a 3-minute commercial for Chromebooks where he focuses on fear of the unknown, fear of switching to a Chromebook, fear of switching away from what you know, Windows or whatever the heck it is. It's kind of a cute commercial. If Bill Nye the Science Guy is your thing, not a whole lot to say there.
Four Chromebooks.
I did think it was kind of interesting that Google is leaning into the fear aspect of switching. Going, hey, nobody's. We want more people to move over. Let's spook.
Did you watch the video?
The commercial.
Yeah. Did we talk about that?
The Bill Nye commercial? Yeah. I did watch that earlier today.
I'm sorry, folks. I had to split out for a call. So I didn't know. Did you watch it on this show?
Okay.
We didn't watch it on this show.
We haven't yet.
No, we haven't watched it on this show.
Okay, good.
And we won't watch it on this show because we don't watch videos on shows anymore.
Oh,
YouTube doesn't like it when we watch other people's videos on our
show. Oh, you're kidding me.
YouTube can be
I don't know. If Leo were here, we probably would watch it. And then
cut it out.
And then cut it out or get it taken down off of YouTube. And then Lisa would come yell at me because our YouTube numbers are down because people are cutting. People keep copying.
Well, all right. So I'm gonna dramatize the video for you.
Yes, please.
I'm going to dramatize the video.
Good.
Hi, I'm geeky Bill Nye, and you trust me because I know science. I'm going to have a dorky coat on, and things are going to move behind me regularly, and I'm going to talk about, what's the topic here? Oh, Windows and how slow Windows is. And I'm going to go to this car, this really beat-up car, which has a funny Windows license plate on it, and I'm going to say, but I love this car. I don't want to leave this car, even though the car is out of date, and it's a mess, and it's got tape all over it. Oh, there goes the part of it falls off. I put the tape back on. I get in the car. It explodes. This is why you shouldn't be on old things like Windows. You should get a nice Chromebook. Gee, look how long it takes a Windows machine to boot. The Chromebook is already booted. Now I'm going to pull on a Hawaiian shirt, and there's going to be a scene from Hawaii behind me, and I can't remember why, because there was some kind of logical fallacy I was trying to teach you, but it doesn't matter. All I'm going to do is take 3 minutes to tell you buy a Chromebook. End.
Wow.
I want Jeff to do Bravo. All of our recreations, I and I need
that
to get
really
him
good.
Sugar
puppy. Absolutely.
I almost feel like we need to get someone talented in deepfakes to put Bill Nye onto your face for that entire piece.
No, I want Jeff on Jeff's face on Bill Nye.
Oh, that would work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that works. Puppets. And I want to see Jeff face doing everywhere. The finger.
Jeff puppet.
Yes.
That was good. Where does a 3-minute commercial play? I guess it's just an internet ad, right?
Yes.
I was wondering
right there,
that.
Yeah.
Maybe
it's at the beginning of Hulu?
Windows people are cranky about this. They were cranky about this earlier today on Windows Weekly.
Oh, I bet.
I time to boot up a Windows machine. Good God, I had to boot up my husband's computer, and I think I made popcorn. I mean, I needed a snack.
I thought the whole bumper falling off, putting it back on, and affixing more duct tape to hold the bumper back up as a reference to patches and stuff. I thought that was smart.
I thought it was cute.
Yeah. I thought it worked. It was effective.
Yeah. They actually had to go back and talk about how angry they were at the old, like, I'm a Mac, I'm a PC commercials. It was too soon.
Salt in the wound.
Exactly.
All those funny little Windows people. Yes, because Chromebooks are superior.
Yeah, I mean, one day they'll realize that too. They're just not.
Yes.
They're not ready.
I don't have to worry. He made another joke about viruses. I can't remember what it was now. If I'd known I was going to do this, I would have rehearsed. Sorry.
You didn't need to rehearse, man. You had it.
We don't actually want to see the whole 3 minutes. I think a shortened, the abridged version from Jeff. The Jeff abridged audiobook was much better.
Absolutely preferred. Agreed. Let's see here. The final beta for Android Q released last week. Just some minor changes and stuff, but Google had shared some information about gestures, which gestures have become kind of the big to do around, you know, Android Q and whether people are going to actually enjoy their gestural navigation approach. And Google did, you know, of course, Google is a data-driven company, so they've tested multiple scenarios just to be sure that they're going in the right direction. Google said that they found that their users actually prefer the... Go away, Google. Oh, wow, it's been transcribing me for a while now. Google said that they've been... that users in the test actually prefer the three-button method for ergonomics. However, Google also found that the gesture system works the fastest in terms of navigating home and navigating back. And people, and so I am assuming that means, well, if it's the fastest, then it's the best. Even though people prefer the ergonomics of the three-button thing, we're going to go with gesture instead. I don't know if it's the right choice, but it's the direction that they're going.
People fear change.
Won't people have a choice on which they can use?
Well, I know that it's going to ship with gestures out of the box. However, they have to keep the three-button navigation around for accessibility reasons,
okay,
because there are some people that would have a hard time with the movement.
And
so having the three-button
like
approach,
me.
in all
seriousness, that's important. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's good that they're not just getting rid of it entirely, right? And realizing that they can keep it around. It kind of splinters their plan a little bit to keep multiple navigation methods. But personally, I don't feel like it hurts anything. Maybe it hurts them longer term, you know, having to design
what happens if you're an
aspects
app
of the OS for both.
But no one's going to rewrite an app for gesture.
I think people are.
Is it not worth it?
Yeah.
Really?
I think they have to because one of the things about gestures on Android Q is, I don't know if you have my overhead shot. I didn't ask you to set it up. It doesn't matter. I can explain it.
If I can act out a whole commercial, you can explain
it.
I can
explain. Hold on.
So basically in Android Q, the navigation for back is swiping in.
Hold up your phone where you want it to be.
Where?
Right there.
There we go.
Okay. Is that, is that what you want?
This is comfortable.
Okay. Never mind. Let's do the other one.
Yeah, okay. The other one I think is probably set up for last night's All About Android, I imagine.
That? No? Is that still not? You still don't like
it? It's perfect. Okay. This is perfect enough for me to show. So if I go into Chrome.
So for anyone listening,
Yes, thank you.
Poor Jason, his arm stretched all the way out, and he's like leaning way.
What I gotta do?
Really long arms.
It's what I got.
He's in
my
screen space.
My tripod arms. We can make this work. So, in order to go back, you have to swipe in from the sides. You have to swipe in from the sides like that. You can do it on either side, but that is your back button essentially going forward. There is no pill down at the bottom. You don't see even a navigation pill when you're on the home screen right now. There's nothing there. It appears when you're in apps. So if I'm in Chrome, I get that little pill down at the bottom. So that, you know, that could be how I go to multitasking. There's my multitasking. It's also how I go to...
Oh, that's a problem actually for me. So guys, do not laugh at me, but right now I have an RSI injury in my thumb. It's because I've been reading a lot on my Kindle. And so I hold it like in my one hand, and then I mush my thumb over to like turn the page.
Yeah.
So I've given myself an RSI injury. So now I've got to be really conscious when I'm on my phone to hold it with one hand and then like use the other finger to do everything.
So accessibility matters for you. Yeah.
I mean, I can see like if you have like arthritis or anything like it's totally. Far easier totally to hold than to swipe. Especially
you know the other injury I get? See, I get little finger as prop for phone injury.
That's because you need a little button.
Pop socket.
No, I'm just holding the phone this way. Oh, no, I don't want that.
Get
a pop socket. It'll change your life.
It will. Although then you get the RSI because like I hold it with my two fingers.
Right.
And then I'm like, and that is another.
Be careful, Stacey. I don't want you to injure your thumb again.
I know. I'm like, that hurts.
I totally do the little pinky end of the phone thing too. It's habit.
And it hurts after a while.
I guess. Yeah.
It's a reflex.
Yeah. It's a total reflex for me. But to answer your question from earlier, yes, developers are going to have to develop around it because if they're, and there are Google apps that break this rule right now. There are Google apps that if you want to pull out the sidebar, you swipe in from the left side. Well, now in the new gesture paradigm, that is a back button.
So, very important question.
Yeah.
What does this do to Tinder?
important to you, I guess.
No, not at all. Not at all important
to me. You're asking for a friend, are you?
Not at all important to me. Kimmy doesn't watch this show anyways.
Okay. I will say what most people say when they're on podcasts. I've never used Tinder. Karsten, when you use Tinder, do you swipe in the middle of the image to the left or right,
no
or do you go from the
Tinder
very
works,
edges?
Actually, but this is no. This is in general. This is going to be a huge problem for a lot of apps.
Or who?
Because if you're swiping right, in your app to do something, and then you move your finger ever so slightly to the edge of the screen, then you're out of the app.
You mean
it's the back button,
right? The only way that the back button registers is if you're at the extreme edge of the screen when you swipe in, if that makes sense.
Right.
So certain UI paradigms, like, and I'm assuming Tinder is like this. When you've got an image and you're swiping it, you're not like putting your finger at the very edge of the screen and swiping over. Maybe you are.
No.
I
wouldn't know, but
fit
no.
of passion or something. But, you know, because you're swiping fast or something like that, maybe it happens. But I would imagine you're probably swiping from inside slightly. And in that case, I think you're outside of the touch zones for back. However, in this new version of Android Q, they do have a back button sensitivity option that's meant to allow for dialing in a better response on back versus like app intentions that where those swipes come in handy. I haven't messed around with that. I've heard that it only makes a marginal difference, but no matter what, developers are going to have to work around it because it just it interferes with the ways that a lot of apps actually operate.
Yeah,
and they've had time to do that, but
this is going to be a UI nightmare because like how far from the edge is too far.
Right.
For the back button.
And I mean,
I'm smelling Newton jokes to come.
Newton jokes?
Newton jokes. Yeah, where I meant to do this, but that happened. Because I didn't do this quite right. And I did that.
I'm not old enough to get this joke. A Newton joke?
Oh, that was cruel. Stacey.
Is it the old Apple Newton that you're talking about?
Yes, I have one in my closet back there.
We've got one somewhere around here. I feel like we have someone.
Wait.
Okay, let's. So I was just writing about typewriters, and I realized the things I had to explain to people, right? Wikipedia feels the need to explain whiteout. Like, why would you ever want to eat a piece of paper? Well, for a certain age, they don't get that. I had to explain the monkeys when I was writing this because whiteout was invented by...
They did that song from Shrek. That's how
Michael
I tell
Nesbitt's kids. Right? So I want to look up Doonesbury and Newton. Let's see. Yes. So look up Doonesbury and Newton. And it was the... well, never mind. It was a butt of jokes at the time, Stacey.
Okay, I'm not. I didn't know.
Here, I don't know.
I can't help it.
I don't know if this is the right one.
I wasn't paying attention then.
Is this the right one?
Yes, that's it.
That's
yes.
The okay. one we came up with, too.
All right.
Gooseberries. So, what does it say here?
I am writing a...
He's scratching.
He's scratching on the stylus for our audio listeners. His thought bubble is, I am writing a sentence. The a Newton sentence. Says, Siam fighting atomic sentry. I am writing a test sentence. Ian is writing a taste sensation. I am writing a test sentence. I am writing a test sentence. Catching on? Egg freckles?
But
it was hilarious at the time.
Because yes. So many shared the pain. Well, maybe so many is overstating it. How many people had the Newton? Is the Newton a very,
it was
very widespread?
Not a.
What was the other special written language you had to have at the time for the other? There was another one.
There's,
what was that called?
What was it called?
Seven something.
It's a super obvious one. I feel like. Damn it! Google, help me. Graffiti. There we go.
Oh, there it is. Yeah. There it is.
Oh, graffiti. Thank you, Stacey, did you ever use a typewriter, a manual typewriter?
Oh, Lord, no. We did have my mom wrote her thesis on an IBM Selectrix, I think. Selectrix?
Selectrix.
No.
Do you know, Stacey, how you had to make an exclamation point on a typewriter?
No.
You had to hit an apostrophe and then backspace and a period.
Oh, it's kind of like making an accent agu on normal.
Jason, did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
Oh, wow. I'm Uncle Jeff today. Yeah.
So apparently we do. We have.
Yes, we do have Newtons.
Three Newtons? Are those three generations?
Here, let me hold them all out for the overhead camera. Oh, I overshot it.
Too far. Your arms are long.
Yeah. There we go. A whole variety of Newtons, one for each of us.
And the idea, what time frame are we talking about? Like, did they work in conjunction with computers, or were they like the first tablets? I mean, what
They were palm competitors.
Yeah.
Okay.
Remind me.
When was the Newton invented? Isaac Newton.
They were before palms. Weren't
they were way before palm because I had
1991.
1992. Yeah, 91, 92, right around there. Yeah.
On sale August 93.
Okay.
That was before the web.
That was very.
Right.
Yeah, so I was in high school.
So you never used a typewriter. Do you know why a typewriter, do you have any awareness of this, Stacey? That a typewriter has a bell, and if so, why does it ring?
When you get to the end of the thing and you have to push the carriage return back.
Okay, good.
But that's only because when I was a little kid, you know, because I wanted to be a journalist at some point in time, you would have all these journalism movies and they'd be like,
right.
Hey, boss, I got a story.
So then... they never invented erasable ink for the typewriter ribbons. They did invent erasable paper. So today I spent an hour trying to find out when it ceased manufacture. It was Eaton Corrasable paper. Only the oldest farts in the audience will understand this. And it was this paper that had a coating on it so the ink wouldn't soak in so you could erase it. But then everything you wrote kind of felt slimy.
Yeah.
And I looked up today and you can buy it on eBay as like a nostalgic blast from the past. Eaton Corrasable paper. I'm done with my Uncle Jeff moment here, but I just thought I'd share these things.
Eaton.
Did you buy it on eBay?
No.
Okay.
Because it smelled bad too. It smelled weird.
Eaton Corrasable paper. Yeah. 10 sheets of vintage.
Vintage.
Vintage typewriter paper. Eaton's Corrasable Bond. 10 sheets on Etsy for $7.
Yeah.
Talk about an investment. Buy a bunch of those. Go into your time machine. Buy a bunch of those and sell them on Etsy. Better than the stock market.
There it is. Erasable bond. Erasable typing paper.
Yeah.
Interesting.
All right. Our blast of the past is over.
Did it smell like a mimeograph?
No. Oh, that was a good smell. Love the smell of mimeograph.
I love that smell.
Third graders got high on mimeographs.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Like that's yeah. like gooey okay. paper.
And, slash end old fart section.
I think that section probably appealed we to need, a lot of people. Who okay, are yeah, we, show wait, right.
Carsten, I think we need a new instrument for the old fart section. I think. In fact, Carsten, please go no. find that.
No.
So next,
no.
week, when Leo starts talking about something old, and I'll get him into it, I'll goad him into it. You can play the old fart theme. Huh?
I love it.
All right, all right. I have I have homework.
All right. Yes, you do.
What is that song?
Well, I don't know. If you need me to, I'll sing right. it afterwards, and you can
yeah,
just
I'll sing it.
It,
and my Pixel 3A will be able to tell what song it is from maybe it can.
Okay, my Pixel 2 does that, and okay. I imagine the Pixel 4 will do it too, Kirsten.
I mean, the Benny Hill theme is an alternate.
No, that's completely different. And that is Yakety Sax. I know that.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Let's do an ad.
Okay, yeah, let's do an ad.
I was like moving along.
Leading up to the show, I was like, wow, you know, there's a lot of really random news in here. I'm not sure what we're going to talk about. Now I know.
randomness.
Total randomness that isn't even in the doc.
When you're not on the show, you're usually very, you keep us on track. Not today.
It's all right.
We are the Seinfeld of podcasts.
this is perfect for my mood today, so I'm happy with it. Let's take a break, thank the sponsor, then we'll get back into more of that.
Trumpets.
This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Worldwide Technology. WWT began building their Advanced Technology Center 10 years ago, and it's grown exponentially ever since. It's like no other testing and research lab. The lab contains more than $500 million in equipment from hundreds of OEMs and key partners, ranging from heavyweights like NetApp, Cisco, and VMware, to emerging disruptors like Tanium, Equinix, and Expanse. WWT is a trusted partner who stays with you over the years. Many of their customers have been with them for over a decade, and that's because they know that WWT is where they can go to get the answers they need to make sure their business runs right. Their ATC is an incubator for IT innovation and offers a number of things: on-demand and schedulable labs like NetApp Cloud Volumes on Tap, ONTAP on Flash, NetApp Disaster Recovery as a Service, along with hundreds of other labs representing newest advances in flash storage, multi-cloud, hyper-converged infrastructure, cloud data management, and more. You can learn about products before you launch. WWT's engineers use these environments to quickly spin up proofs of concept and pilots using the sandbox so customers can confidently select the best solutions. And in many cases, this reduces concept time from months to weeks, which increases speed to market. They offer lab as a service, which is a dedicated lab space within the ATC. And this is where customers can perform programmatic testing using the vast technology ecosystem that WWT has already built. It's virtual, so you can take full advantage of ATC's unique benefits anywhere in the world, 24/7. WWT engineers work in these labs every day. They're beta testing new equipment. They're building reference architectures and custom integrations to help their customers make decisions and see results faster and with much less investment. The time is finally here. WWT has launched their new digital platform encompassing the ATC ecosystem. This ecosystem creates a multiplier effect of knowledge, speed, and agility anytime, anywhere around the world for their customers. So you can get access to articles, case studies, hands-on labs, and other tools that make the difference in today's fast-paced world. You can learn more about WWT, the ATC, and sign up for pre-launch access to their new on-demand lab platform by going to wwt.com/twit. WWT simplifies the complex. That's wwt.com/twit. WWT is delivering business and technology outcomes around the world, and we thank them for their support of This Week in Google. Let's see here. We actually have more googly things that we can talk about. Actually, a few things in here about YouTube. Apparently, YouTubers Union which formed 2 years ago, now has 21,000 members, is picking up steam. Bloomberg says this could be a blueprint for labor organization of digital platforms.
Yeah, sure.
Organizer and YouTube George Sprave, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, teamed up with IG Metal, which is Europe's largest trade union, to do this. And basically, it's all in response to sudden demonetization of videos. And specifically, the demonetization of videos with little to no explanation as to what led to it. So the union is requesting more transparency with the creator community. What does the strike look like if it happens within, as relates to YouTube? Is it that creators stop producing content?
They just make videos of walking back and forth.
Didn't we talk about this last week?
I don't know. Did you?
Well, we did. Oh, so, no, and I'm not trying to poop on your story. And like, is there news that's related to this? Because this was something we talked about. We're like, what is that?
Oh, okay.
Like?
I'm sorry. I didn't see it in there.
You do not have to be sorry.
It's okay.
We did talk about it, but it's still.
It's still a. I mean, it's still a good topic. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, well,
I just think it'll be videos of a big inflatable rat. do you guys know that reference or not?
Yes, we do know that reference.
Union people stick it up. When I lived in New York, though, I was like, that's the first time I'd ever seen it because I had grown up in Texas, so I was like, why is there a giant rat in front of the MoMA?
We get the Grim Reaper more out here for some reason than the big rat.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, okay. So then we might see a union, some sort of response. We might not.
Oh, that's how we got the unboxing Jimmy Hoffa joke.
Yeah, that was it. Right.
That was good. Okay. Yeah.
It was even a joke. That's how.
Well, it was a good joke.
Okay.
Jeff,
all right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Well, maybe this ties into it. Meanwhile, some YouTube stars can apparently break all the rules and still make all the money. Elizabeth Dorskin from the Washington Post spoke with 11 YouTube mods. All those mods believe that popular creators, people like Logan Paul, are getting special treatment, looser restrictions. They can get away with things like demeaning speech, graphic content, bullying, etc. Where others are being, you know, are being held responsible for that stuff. Mods are saying they regularly recommended stripping ads from infringing videos and were often overruled by higher ups with the creators. With the creators that had a higher profile. YouTube mod said YouTube's stance is that nothing is really an issue until there is a headline about it, which is kind of troubling.
It's kind of how the world works. I mean, I'm not saying it should, and this is kind of a way online platforms give people the power to complain and be heard. But I mean, even in classrooms, you will have, you know, kids who are maybe more popular and well-liked can treat other kids like crap and get away with things not every kid gets away with. So, I mean,
privilege has many flavors. Yes.
Yeah. Sure. That's just life.
Sure. So I'm now listening to Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow, Daniel Kahneman's book about how the brain operates in neuroscience, which I thought was going to be just one of those kind of, ridiculous books, but it's scientific and it's interesting. So they had one study that he mentions where judges in, I think it was Israel, could be wrong, they tracked on their decisions on parole. They have like 7 minutes to make parole decisions, right? Boom, 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 boom. And the closer you are to lunch and they're hungry, it's like 90% don't get it. As soon as they're back from lunch, like 90% get parole. And so there are odd things that can cause unjust decisions in the world. Including privilege and making money, but all kinds of things. So you're right, Stacey. It's unfortunately the way the world operates. Yeah, and lunch.
Well, and so the solution would be to be more data-driven, right? But then you're like, making the correlation, and did they also do a good job of showing causation with that correlation or not? Because that's the other thing. You have to then take all that data that you have, derive the correlation there, and then make sure that the method by which you're using to derive that correlation is actually as unbiased as possible, which is hard.
Right, which is hard. Kahneman also talks about how he tried to unbias his grading of two test questions, and he was upset that he realized all the bias that he brought to it and didn't know what to do about it. We all have bias in decisions.
Sure.
Not just justify it. But yeah, like, you've got to build systems that recognize that.
In thinking about how you can do it in ways that make sense for, you know, what you're doing. So like in this case, demonetizing YouTube creators. I mean, because like, think about like when orchestras were like, oh, we don't have any women. Why is that? And they started doing blind tryouts for the orchestra. Right. You got more women. And things like not putting a name on a resume is sometimes very helpful. Or, you know, we see people like women don't get jobs as often as men do. We see women or people with names that are perceived to be of color don't get jobs as often or job offers. So what is a method that might help moderate things more fairly? And would Google really want to do that? Probably not.
I mean, basically, you got to recognize the unfairness and then you've got to build that in. You got to build in the compensation. Mm. Yeah.
Should the YouTube mods be driven more towards kind of appealing to advertisers, which is one of the things that, you know, these mods kind of pointed out, or to harm reduction? Because we're hearing a lot about that as well.
Which is important, which is also an algorithmic issue. Sure. So let me tie this, if I may, to Facebook. Last week, when I was out there, I was at a oversight board meeting. They brought in about 25 people who've written about the oversight board and took them through kind of the last round of their thinking about it. And full disclosure, they paid for the hotel room, and I have raised money for my school from Facebook, but I'm independent of Facebook. And so it goes just to what you're saying. It is what they try to do, they try desperately to do, is to say, we have a set of rules and we are going to enforce those rules, and that's what makes this fair. But it doesn't really work, right? And so now they recognize they need this kind of higher body to figure out whether the rules are fair and being enforced fairly. And my argument about that was, well, okay, what's the higher body's North Star? Who are they responsible for? Are they responsible to the users, to the public, to government, to the company, to God and ethics? And they didn't really have that North Star built in. So, of course, I obnoxiously went and wrote one for them on Medium. Mm-hmm. But it's none of this is as simple as saying there is a rule and an algorithm or a bunch of lowly paid people can enforce that. At some level, you've got to make judgments and you've got to stand by those judgments and you've got to say why you made them. And transparency matters too. And that means humanity. And these companies, I think YouTube now has, I forget what the number, like 9,000 people, 7,000 people they've hired to work on this stuff. Facebook has 30,000 people they've hired to work on this stuff. At that scale, it's really hard. They're not dealing with technology. They're dealing with humanity. And humanity is difficult.
Yeah. Well, and as
we do.
Humanity is difficult, especially at scale, at that scale.
The more of us there are, yes, the more difficult we become.
Yes, indeed. And by the way, Jeff, I loved your piece last week. I ran across your piece on the
machine. Oh,
thank you. Yeah,
I thought you can't say it out loud because you'll get in trouble.
But. I was about to, and then I was like, "Eh, maybe I shouldn't say that." But yes, it was awesome. I'm happy.
It was responding to Beto's complaint about journalism, and it's fascinating that Beto O'Rourke and Ocasio-Cortez and Castro have all made, I think, very good criticisms of journalism, which we're hearing from them, not from journalists.
Yeah. I'm happy your post got as much attention as it did. Because
thank you.
Yeah. It was really, really fascinating.
I was on MSNBC on Sunday about it, and they shocked me because they put, I just got a quick list, and I turn around, and there's my, basically my, the 10 headlines of my post on this huge wall screen. Ooh, shit. I wish I'd said something different there.
Okay, what was the headline on the post? You got to help us.
Beto to journalism, what the F?
Oh, okay.
I spelled it out. Because my last rule was, you're not our protector, spare us your asterisks. Asterisked.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Lisa.
Isn't that, well, that's for iTunes.
Yes, it is.
Censorship by the platform.
Yes.
Did you hear that Facebook wants to get in on the news train again? Apparently, the Wall Street Journal, reports that Facebook is approaching big name news publications about it, a dedicated news section that is.
Stacey has an evil grin on her face.
Fall.
I'm
settling in to hear your opinion.
So you can you can go against it.
Publications are going to have control over how their articles appear on Facebook. And Facebook has confirmed that this is a feature that is coming sometime in the fall.
And they've talked about it. I mentioned it briefly on the show after it was mentioned at Newsgeist Europe. They're calling it a new news surface, mm-hmm. which is hard to say and very geeky because they talk about surfaces. It's a tab. And news will not leave the news feed. It'll still be there. But one executive said to me at the company, I can't control your uncle on news feed. I need a space where I can control the environment for news. And they recognize that not everybody's going to go there, that it's for us freaky people who actually read the news. And they're going to pay publishers. It looks like, according to the journal and what I've heard, they're going to make a multi-year commitment to do that. It's going to be a limited, small number of publishers. It's going to be, I think, somewhat curated and somewhat algorithmic. And they're going to try for personalization. That's pretty much what I know about it. Mm-hmm. And it's going to launch as soon as this fall, so kind of imminently.
Yeah. Yeah, right around the corner. Should publishers be rushing to get involved this time around? Do they learn?
I always follow the example of the Washington Post and Marty Baron. I don't know whether they've signed up or not, but generally the Post has said, we'll try anything. And if it's awful, then we'll leave it. And I think that my view here is that no matter what you think of Facebook, the public we serve is there. And on the one hand, journalists have been screaming and yelling, these platforms stole our money, as if God gave it to them and God didn't, but fine. They stole our money. They should give us some money. And so then Facebook comes along and says, okay, we're going to give you some money. Then you're going to corrupt us with your money. You don't do that. You can't win. I think it's a worthy – I was a little dubious at first, but I think that the way they're talking about it is just to have a space on Facebook for news, I think makes sense. I think it's worth trying to do. But let's be clear here, news hounds. There is no messiah. Nothing's going to save us except our own innovation and our own changing our own business. So, if anybody thinks this is going to be a huge bucket of money that's going to solve all your money problems, it's not. But what the heck? More money? Get some money from Facebook? Sure.
And I have been waiting for my bucket of money, and it still hasn't shown up. I'm very upset.
Yeah, empty.
It's at the end of the rainbow, Stacey. Just got to find the rainbow.
Just keep waiting.
I've just got to keep going.
Just keep on waiting.
There with my lucky charms. All right. What should a publisher ask themselves? So I was looking at that, and I'm like, the drawbacks to AMP, if you amplify your website, then you've got all these links that, you can't un-AMP, that kind of don't belong to you anymore. Is there any sort of concern about that here?
I don't know how they're going to format it. I don't know whether there was one report that I don't believe that said it wasn't going to be content. It was just going to be links and they were paying for links. I don't think that's true. I think it's European wishful thinking. I could be wrong. I would imagine this is duplicative of your own website.
Okay. So then it's not.
I don't know. I would just bet that because they already have instant articles. So I would imagine it just uses that and says you have to meet a speed limit about how fast this is. The other thing that they're working on, they like Google have been working on trying to oomph subscriptions. They're trying to oomph membership. They're trying. I've had people call me and try to get, how else can we try to get revenue for publishers? The companies really do want to do that. The problem is the basic model of the publisher is still borked.
It really is. And it's tough and it's frustrating because I want to support publications given my career, mm-hmm. but by God, I can't afford everything. And yeah. The advertiser model was awesome. So how do we bring something? What else subsidizes good journalism? And the answer really so far is nothing.
I saw Ev Williams last week, and he's changed his mind a couple times, as we know. But he believes that he can make something work with consumer payments and splitting it up on Medium. The weird thing for me is that they try to put my stuff behind the paywall on Medium. And I say, I don't want that. I want to brainwash people. That's why I'm there. I want more readers.
It's my propaganda platform.
Exactly. Hypnotize the public. But Ev thinks he's starting to make a go, and he started to hire some journalists again. You know, full disclosure is he's laid them off in the past, but I think that he's trying. Again, there's just no Messiah. That's all.
Yeah. Hmm. What else we got?
Have we done? Have we had any trumpets playing?
No, we haven't. Well, yeah, you know, I was about to ask, are there any stories that you want to get in before the trumpets play? Before they sound?
And, once I got the ego of my piece in. Oh, I think we should mention briefly, if I may.
Yes.
There's been some horrendous coverage in the last week or so of Section 230. The New York Times did a big package with three stories, and they had to put out a correction that basically pulled the rug out from the entire story. They thought that Section 230 was the protection of free speech online. It's not in the United States. It's the First Amendment. The coverage of then somebody else complained about Business Week's coverage. The coverage of tech policy is getting worse and worse and worse. And I really see a danger to 230 here that could be done out of just plain ignorance. And there's some better coverage coming out now. I think this one got better reviews that you just showed from Wired. But I just want to mention that you have pros like Stacey who really understand the beat and really understand the implications and really know their stuff. And then you have tech coverage now, which has gone from ignorant and trying to look for some wonderful rainbow, end of the rainbow with a gold pot of gold, and then now is turned to ignorant and dystopian. And the truth is somewhere in between, and it's too uninformed, and it's really the quality of tech coverage is bothering me a lot.
Well, that's a function of a lack of experience, and I will say I'm not covering this, but I will say tech policy is hard because it incorporates tech, which is always hard, and there are things you have to understand. Like when I cover the FCC, it's really important for me to understand like spectral efficiency, even though it doesn't feel like you should have to understand that. And then you have to understand the laws and what words are going to matter inside the laws that people propose and where the ambiguities are. And that requires a journalist who's been on the beat for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many 30 or 40 or 50 and above year old journalists there are still, you know, especially at a tech publication, which usually get because the model is so churn,
yes,
you're burnt out.
Yes,
so it really is.
I think there's very few Cecilia Kangs in the world, and there's a lot more. Oh, he also works at the New York Times. I was going to say Brian Chen. That man, he does not always know what he's talking about. But that's why there's not a lot of informed tech policy. And so then the publications turn to people with an agenda to write about it.
Yes.
So and they do that because they need someone who has the policy experience if they're a tech firm, or if they're a policy firm, then they just usually turn to lobbyists or lawyers. So that's not helpful.
Yep. All true. So thank you. I just wanted to get that little mini screed in.
Absolutely. All right. Well, without further ado, then, I think it's time to sound the horns.
The Google changelog.
Holy cow, a lot has changed this week. There are many changes, starting with Google Maps, bringing its AR navigation to, I think, all Android phones and iPhone devices.
Have you guys used this in the wild?
That was going to be my question for you. I have used it. I used it once while I was out and about, and I wasn't quite sure which direction I needed to be facing. And yeah, it was neat. It was neat, and it was actually useful in that moment. It's not something I use every day. But
Stacey?
Definitely.
Me too. Although I will say my GPS and compass on my phone are just freaking terrible. Which really impacts the quality of this. Like this is always my issue. It's like, you're going the right. Oh no, you were really going the wrong way. I'm sorry. And then it's like, do the figure eight to make your compass better. Okay. And I'm like, I've done the figure eight. But yeah, I've seen it, and it sent me off in the purported right direction, only to change its mind later. But that wasn't
my complaint with it, because I want to have a complaint. I've been dying for this, and I used it. I think it was in Paris last. I was there for a humble brag, and I haven't tried the latest release, so maybe it's better. But this was about 6 weeks ago. And to try to keep you from getting killed, you're holding it like this, looking where you're going, literally, because it's telling you follow the arrow, right? And then it'll say, no, don't do that, because that's going to get killed, you idiot.
I put the phone down.
Right.
So you put the phone down and you walk five steps. Then you still say, I don't know where I'm going now. So you get the thing back up again. Now it makes you take pictures all around you looking like an absolute idiot as you turn around, taking pictures all around. Then you find it again. Then you repeat, rinse, and repeat. And so I've been dying to have this. The walking in BAPS has always been bad. I'll try the new version. But this is a case where probably the old like watch motif where it buzzes at you and knows where you are and tells you to turn or tells you to put the watch up. The weird thing to me is the phone never has a compass that if you – same in the car. If I hold it this way, can't that know which way I'm pointing it? But it doesn't.
I think – well, yeah, that's a, I guess that's a good question.
Yeah, I feel never, like there are apps the arrow's that do never that, quite right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's never perfect. I will fully agree with that. My experience with this was actually pretty effective. It for the most part kept it locked in. I did get the message that you're talking about where
you're
if you're holding
die,
it up too long, then it's like, nope, you got to put your hand down, like focus on the road while you're walking and look at this, you know, every once in a while instead of like just walking like this. And when I pulled it back up, I didn't have to rescan. It just kind of like picked up from where I left off.
Oh, that's
and
good.
I could see it. So that's probably how it's supposed to work. And for whatever reason, you know, is requiring you to rescan. That would be really annoying. It worked pretty well for me though. So I'm positive on that.
See, and I try to only, once I start my directions, I actually don't want to pull out my phone because it makes me feel like one of the first things I, you know, taught my daughter and I learned, I don't know if guys learn this too, but don't look at your phone. It makes you a possible victim, right? Mm. You look distracted and people might like mug you or something. So I always keep my, like I set it up and I go and I put my phone in my pocket and I wait for it to like vibrate to tell me or tell me to turn.
Right.
So
that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. New security feature for Android phones, which basically allows you to use your fingerprint that you use to authenticate on your phone to get into some of Google services. So this is first appearing in Chrome for Android. If you visit passwords.google.com on the phone, you may be prompted to authenticate using your fingerprint sensor. And this is all based on the FIDO2 framework that was introduced at Android 7.0. And it's just, you know, kind of part of Google's ultimate effort to peel away from requiring passwords, which can be faulty in and of themselves, and instead, you know, opt for something on the device that they don't have access to that can still authenticate you effectively. So,
Carson, I don't know if you got it. I just sent you a photo regarding the last story. Did you get a picture? I just sent you.
Let me see. Did you email it?
Email. Yeah.
Let me check. I'm sure I got it. No, I didn't actually.
Showed
up.
So this, relevant to the last story, sorry, it took a minute, is on the floor in a hallway at Twitter.
Eyes up.
Nice.
Yep.
Wow. Isn't that nice?
That's cool. Now, and that's in the, and then that's the Maps app, right? No,
Never mind.
My brain was still locked into, and I was like, wait a minute, why were you navigating through the Twitter HQ with Google Maps? I was a little slow. I only ate half a sandwich today, okay? Give me a break. That is great. I love it. I love that.
What kind of sandwich was it, Jason?
What kind of sandwich? I think it's just like a, no, it was a tuna salad.
Was this free food day?
Oh God, you've got
Wednesday.
You've got a tuna salad
day.
Sandwich just sitting out somewhere? That's cruel to your colleagues.
Yeah. I guess so. Well, I sit next to Karsten, so we'll both enjoy the smell of that room when we get back there. You're welcome, Karsten. Browser tabaholics rejoice. Chrome is testing a new tab grouping feature, apparently. If you download the latest Chrome Canary build, it's still experimental. Google says you do risk losing browser data or compromising your security or privacy, but if you want to try it, you can. And it's basically a way to group Chrome tabs into a single tab, pretty much what it sounds like. It can be enabled in the flags part, you know, area of Chrome. Just search for groups while you're there and you can activate it. Chrome OS 76, I wonder if I have the update on this, is rolling out some pretty cool new features, Android-style notification media controls, also GPU acceleration for Christini and Linux containers. But I think the feature that people are going to notice probably is the support for virtual desks. And I think we talked about this the last time I was on with Kevin Toefel, who talked about these virtual desktops so you can have different desktops that you can switch in between for different tasks and everything, and something that you've probably seen before on Mac OS and Windows. And
I've been trying to get to it, but I'm on 75 and I can't force it to upload to 76.
Yeah.
Kevin!
And I'm not seeing an update on mine to go there yet. But okay. I'll be looking for it. This is pretty minor. Google Docs apparently added a new Lexand font family that's designed to be easier and faster to read, 8 different widths. So when you want the doc that you're sending to be easy to read and fast, apparently use this font.
Okay. The font looks horrible.
Yeah, I don't like it at all.
And unreadable.
Yeah. But hey, is it even easy to read? Like that top thing, I feel like all the spacing makes it more difficult for me.
Oh, no, it's like an eye test.
This is actually very useful for teachers, though, because surprisingly few fonts use the right A.
Oh, okay.
And so now you don't have to use Comic Sans all the time if you're a teacher.
Well, that's good.
Wait. Why do you use Comic Sans? Like, because you want that?
The lowercase A.
It doesn't have
in most fonts is the fancy one. And when
don't you just teach them that's an A?
Well, for young children who are learning to read, it can be confusing.
That when they're handwriting, no one makes the fancy A. Everyone makes the unfancy.
Nobody teaches handwriting anymore.
That's not true. My daughter actually learned cursive before she learned to write in print, which is really strange.
Yeah, no, my kids.
Well, no, it's just in print. No one uses the fancy A.
Yeah. Definitely working on cursive at our kids' school. So that's
good. Jeff, you're getting this like old man get off my lawn kind of look.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Don't do it. It makes sense.
All right.
It's like moving on.
Speaking of education, though, new updates to Google for Education. Course Kit is something that was first launched last year for teachers to integrate Docs and Drive into course assignment work. It's now going to be called Assignments and run as a standalone tool, but it includes a new feature, it's interesting, called Originality Reports. This checks for similar works in the database and on the internet. Yes, it can be used to detect plagiarism, but also missing citations. So, you know, I mean,
it's a nice way of saying plagiarism.
Yes.
I believe that's you true. May that's be missing true. A citation. Would you like to add it?
Okay, good. Could have been awkward. Anyways, I think that's an interesting tool. And Google Search is going to now include individual podcast episodes that feature the topic of your search term. For now, if you include the word podcast into your search query, you will see these up at the top of your search results. Clicking a podcast result that comes up opens it inside of Google Podcasts. Eventually, I don't know if it does yet, but eventually it'll work with assistant commands too, something like Hey G, play podcast about golden retrievers, and then it would come back with one and play it. And of course, Google is indexing podcast audio content in order to do this. And I think we're going to see more and more down this road, as far as podcasts are concerned with all that indexing. It's kind of interesting, kind of exciting stuff to make it all searchable. And then finally, Visa announced that it's shutting down its Visa checkout service in 2020. As such, Google is removing it from Google Pay. Something I never use. I need to use Google Pay more. I think I say that.
My credit card doesn't work on it. I want to use it, but mine won't go.
I put it on.
A United credit card.
I think I've used it twice. I think I've had to use it because I downloaded somebody's transportation app that required me to use it.
Oh, okay.
I think it was Stockholm's Transportation Act.
I think I've used it a handful of times on my phone when I forget my wallet and I'm somewhere. The wallet is so ingrained in me. It's impossible.
When I forget my wallet, I just go to Starbucks.
Have I shown you my wallet? Have I shown you my beloved wallet?
No.
Okay. You ready? Are you ready for this?
Erasable print paper?
Right.
Oh. Ooh.
Have I shown you my wallet, Jeff?
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Single. Oh, yeah.
Wait. I want one of those. How does that work? How does it work?
I think it's like a switchblade. Jeff wins because his all pop up at different angles.
His are a little bit more majestic than mine. Mine are just
What kind of wallets are these? Or is this like a trick?
No, mine is called Secred, Secred. And this is going to be an old fart moment. Get the bazookas ready here, or whatever the instrument is. So I used to have my wallet in my rear pocket, and then I was getting bursitis in my rear end, in my hip, and it was causing pain. And I just could. So I finally could not sell it. This takes 6 cards, plus my employee card, plus my health card, plus the subway card. And it amazes guests. And it's wonderful. And it fits in my front pocket. It's tiny.
Yep.
And I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh,
I
completely dude, I'm totally it. Buying one of these for my husband.
This is the greatest thing. S-E-C-R. There you go.
I found it.
Love it.
S-E-C-R-I-D.
I kind of want one for me.
I-D.
Yeah, it's great.
They're very pretty.
Yeah, they're nice.
They're nice. So do they require a battery? What's the deal?
So I don't know if yours is
you
the same.
You actually move the button.
Yeah, it's like a
switchblade.
Yeah, it's like a switchblade. Yeah, it's like a mechanical button. This is an Exter brand. And it actually has, so in the back here, I actually did a review of this not too long ago for Hands on Tech. It has this little tracker in it that charges through solar power. So you just slide it in there, and then I know where my wallet is if I've left it behind or whatever.
Whoa.
Wait, tell me yours.
When do you take it out of your wallet, which is in your dark pocket? When is that possibly exposed to the sun?
You have to set it out. But I mean, the battery charge. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to do it very often, but the battery lasts for like 4 months. So
wallet?
What's that? The Exter. I think it's called the Exter Parliament.
E-X-T-E-R.
Yeah, it's the Parliament wallet. Reviewed it on Hands on Tech, I think like 3 weeks ago.
They sent me a bunch of emails. I probably should have paid attention.
And it has the card slot, so it holds 5 cards on the inside as well. Maybe this is my thing. No, it's not actually my thing. But the slot protects against RFID skimming as well.
Yes, mine too. Yeah. Yes.
So it's kind of, you know, you keep your things in there, and then when you need them, you fan them out.
Mine is nice and thin.
Is yours, so the slim wallet of yours fits 4 to 6 cards.
Yeah,
6 extra cards, banknotes, business cards, receipts, and that's $90. And in yours, your Parliament, which makes me think of cigarettes, is also $90. All right, so if I want a switchblade wallet,
who's gonna convince Stacey? Who's going to win this one?
I think the fanning on yours is a little more satisfying.
It is, because it means I can get the exact card I want then.
Well, I mean, this fans it too. It just doesn't fan it out as far. Like,
oh, no.
All the 5 cards are fanned, but you've got extra distance.
And
it is very satisfying, though, to go to the store and pull out the wallet and just go and pull out the thing. You know, it's really nice.
I was at the dentist, and the women behind the counter, I got to get that for my husband, and they all... Yeah.
Yeah, I'm totally buying one of these. I want to buy one for me right now, but that would spoil me getting it for my husband, so I'll have to wait. His birthday's in November, so if you run into him, don't tell him anything.
Well, you got to wait. Oh, Stacey, your delayed satisfaction here. The phone doesn't come out till November. The wallet doesn't come out till November. You're just biting your gums. Yeah.
Really? Yeah, my life is just terrible at this moment.
A giant weight.
But soon you will get 2 marshmallows.
What?
Sorry.
What?
Sorry, there was a reference.
That's that psychological experiment.
So, yes.
Yeah, except.
We never sounded the end of the Google changelog.
That's because it hasn't ended yet.
Okay, we'll end it right now.
Sorry.
What do you say we do some tips, tricks, numbers, things, whatever you happen to have?
Yes.
It's about that time. Let's start with you, Stacey. What's your thing?
Okay, I wanted to do, I know that I showed this off. This is the Amazon Echo Auto device. After 3 weeks of hardcore testing, and I thought I was going to have a story ready, but I didn't finish it in time, so my bad. I'm going to tell you guys, do not buy this. It is glitchy, and it shows the weaknesses of Bluetooth beyond all possible measures. And I was so excited. This is a $25 device that gives you Amazon's Echo device, so Madam A, in your car. It works over your phone. It connects to your phone via Bluetooth. It connects over your car speakers via Bluetooth or the auxiliary cable, depending on your car. There's a list. If you scroll down in the page, it's a list of the cars that it will work with. It will not work with cars that, like, when you're using CarPlay or CarPlay by Apple or Google's car thing? Android Auto.
Yeah.
Like, just make it up names now. Android Auto. So if those are already enabled, like not just like on your phone, it will work. Then you can't have Alexa too, basically. So getting it connected was easy. The challenge is if you have a shared vehicle, it's horrible. Because to disconnect disconnect your phone, you have to say, Madam A, disconnect. And then it will connect to the other phone, but only if your phone's not in the vicinity, which is hard if your phone's within Bluetooth range of the car, which happens more often than you might think.
And if both drivers are together in the car at the same time, in other words, right?
Yes, but then that's less bad because it's going to be connected to one of your phones and it doesn't really matter which one it's connected to.
Oh, I see. You can either one of you can talk, right?
Yeah, but it is frustrating when you're like in the garage and you're trying to get things going as you're pulling out and it's still not sure who it's trying to connect to. The other thing is I noticed when I was playing with it in my car, anytime I got, it was very random, but I would hear, and I had my Jabra Bluetooth headphones in, my car would talk to me over my headphones while I was on calls with people. They couldn't hear it, but every now and then I'd get a message from my car saying, if you would like to run this over your car speakers, please press mute and then turn up the volume on your car. And I was like, what is happening? And then I remembered. So that was
my sister, the Reverend Cynthia Jarvis, is retiring next month as a minister in Chestnut Hill, Pennsylvania. I thought I'd just plug her for a second there. So she has hearing aids now. And they're Bluetooth hearing aids.
Oh, yes.
And so it's very wacky that suddenly she's hearing something the rest of us aren't hearing, or use the phone. I don't need hearing aids yet, but they're kind of jealous. They're kind of cool.
My mom has some, and she loves hers. But it was hilarious because she was sitting in the living room with my dad while talking to me, and she's like, "Oh, let me put you on speaker so your dad can hear you," but she could not get it off of her headphones. So like she's basically yelling at me. My dad can't hear me. It was really great. It took a little bit. And so, yeah. And then my husband, when we pulled it out of my car, which is the Tesla, and he put it in his BMW, and he really wants this to work and it really does not like him. So I'm going to say Amazon's sending out invites for this thing. It's not expensive, but it doesn't work.
Yeah, it's pretty inexpensive. It's like it looked like it was on sale for 25, like half off. Normally 50, right? That would normally be 50.
Well, I've only seen it for 25.
Okay.
So I bought it for 25.
It is cheap.
Yeah.
But I think if you had your own car that you only drove, it might be okay. Although in my car it was okay. In my husband's car it was not okay. So I don't recommend it.
This makes me feel much better. They sent me an email that said I could use it. I was very excited about it. They sent me an email. It went to my like email that I never read except for like once a month. And a week later they said, no, you can't have it anymore. So I had to do it again. And I was very
You can have mine if you want.
No, I don't want it. I don't really want it. I don't want it now.
It's not fun. I really wanted this to work. So I'm really sad.
All right. Thumbs down on the Echo Auto. Jeff, what is your number?
I like the decisiveness of that, Stacey. I appreciate that. couple things. I can't avoid this one, which was up on the rundown that Marissa Meyer bought Tumblr for more than $1 billion, and Matt Mullenweg just bought it for about, reports have it, $3 million. But Tumblr lives. No porn, folks. Ain't coming back, they're saying. But that's cool. That's one. Two is Tom Steyer spent $2.9 million in Facebook ads to get his 130,000 small donors, which has people saying, see, you still buy elections no matter what. All this rule about getting a bunch of small donors, you buy them. But the number I really want to mention is 1619. This is 400 years since the first slaves were sold in this country. It's an important anniversary. And the New York Times, under the vision of Nicole Hannah-Jones, who's a brilliant journalist there, has put together a magnificent package for this weekend. And it's all out today. And I suggest you start with Nicole Hannah-Jones' essay and keep going. It's a really impressive package and an important thing to note and learn from.
I've been hearing a lot about that.
Yeah, it's a really good package. I have not finished it, but I have, yes.
Indeed, 16.
What was that sound?
That was a hooah, yeah. Do it. That's my workout sound. That's my whoop. Instead of my whoop, it's my hooah. Although whenever
that'll be
I make
the name
that
of
sound,
your wearable.
Yeah.
The hooah, hooah.
The hooah belongs to the Marines, but
that's ooh, true. Yeah, yeah,
punched
yeah.
Punched in the stomach. That belongs to me.
Right. my thing is something that I actually just got yesterday, and I'm going to be giving it a review. I don't have it in here because it's large, and I took it home, and the thought of like unplugging it and bringing it back just seemed like too much this morning. But the JBL Link Bar, you may remember hearing about this, not this year at Google I.O., but last year at Google I.O. They announced it during the keynote. It was a collaboration between JBL and Google to create a link bar with Android TV and Google Assistant baked into it. So essentially, it is a link bar Google Home. And you know, when the TV is off, it's still just a Google Home active speaker. So it's like all the other Google Homes in your, you know, throughout your home. It just happens to be in the link bar format. And so I'm curious to play around with it. Because it has Assistant along with Android TV and, you know, connected to your TV, there's a lot of like possible integrations, you know, between using your voice to control inputs on your TV and basically control all of your media that way, which you can do with other devices. You could do that with a Shield TV if you wanted to get a separate Shield TV for your TV set and stuff. It's not like this is a first, but having it all baked into one single device is a little bit different from what we've seen before. One downside, though, that I know going in is 4 gigs of onboard storage with absolutely no expandable storage option. So no USB port for expanding storage, no micro SD card slot. And if this is like a media, you know, if you're running Android TV and you want to install apps on there and everything like that, want to put media onto it like you could a Shield TV, let's say, you're going to run out of space super fast. And I feel like that's a really big downside on this thing.
Like, but one Marvel movie.
Yeah. I mean, that's nothing. You know, don't install any apps if you, you know, I don't know what you do with 4 gigs, and I don't know what they were thinking having it just be 4 gigs. It's also pretty expensive. By itself, it's $399, and that doesn't include a subwoofer, which is an additional $300. So it's a pricey link, sound bar as far as those are concerned. So I don't know if it's necessarily the best, but we've been waiting for a while, and I'm curious to put it through its paces. So that's my thing. You can get it now if you really want to buy it before the review, but maybe wait until after the review. Maybe I'll inform you on some things that might change your mind or make you decide to pull the trigger. So,
and or you can buy one of Twit's 3 Newtons.
Well, no, these are coming home with us. We're going to start using it. This is going to be actually how the three of us communicate with each other. I'm going to send one to each of you, and we're going to keep in touch.
This is how you figure out your show titles. You'll put in a speculative show title, and then it'll come back with something even better.
Yes.
Even more strange.
The Newtons with the cutting edge artificial intelligence baked in.
Yeah.
If you would like to hear Jason say more words about the JBL Link Bar, you can go to our new show, Hands on Tech,
Good call.
Tech 40, episode 40 is all about the JBL Link Bar.
Yes.
While you're plugging new shows, don't you want to plug another new show?
Maybe.
Well,
okay, maybe. It's the quiz. You just failed.
Do I?
He ducks out.
The boss has a new show, doesn't he?
Ask yes.
The tech guy.
We are asking people to send us tech questions for our new show, Ask the Tech Guy, which we just set our episode zero of today. Episode one will be premiering on August 26th, and TWiT listeners are encouraged to send in tough questions for Leo to answer. If you have problems, please ask the tech guy.
Yeah,
one question a show, one an in-depth show. Answer is That's promised.
Right. Exactly.
That's right.
Oh, I'm going to ask him about setting up Family Link for my Google accounts and making them all work.
Boom.
It's going to blow his mind.
Do it.
Excellent.
twits.tv/ATG for Ask the Tech Guy. Though there's two T's there, but I guess they don't count the as the T. twit.tv/ATG will take you to the page, and there you can find the email address. If you want to send in a question, it's askthetechguy@twit.tv. And yeah, this will be a lot of fun. Starts in a couple weeks, and thank you for the reminder, Jeff. This news did actually just announce today. I believe
I just saw it
morning,
on Lisa's Facebook feed.
Yeah.
Leo, of course, doesn't have a Facebook feed, but social Lisa has a Facebook feed.
Yes, yes.
So see the benefits of it?
twit.tv/ATG. Thank you all. Thank you for hopping on today, Jeff. It was great to see you again. I think you were out the last time I was on, so it's good to see,
yeah, it's
you,
back great
in
to
your,
see you
back in your home again. What do you want to leave people with? Where can people follow you and all that?
Oh, nothing.
Nothing.
They're
just here.
Sick of me. They're sick of me. I tell you, all they're right. sick of me.
All right. All right, fine. Well, it's good to see you. Also good to see you, Stacey Higginbotham. And yeah, so when does this whole marshmallow thing happen?
Okay, so the marshmallow thing that we're talking about is a test that psychologists give to kids. Purportedly, if you give them the option, you put a marshmallow on the table and you tell them if they don't eat the marshmallow for like 5 minutes or something, then they can have two marshmallows. So what you're doing is you're trying to see if the kids can wait 5 minutes. Those that can wait and get two instead of just one marshmallow are predisposed to be more successful in school and other things in life.
So you would wait for the marshmallow then?
Oh, for sure, because I am on top of my game.
Yeah, exactly. So everybody can send their marshmallows to Stacey.
I think it was actually a reference to me having to wait till November to both buy a wallet and right. decide what phone I'm buying.
But if you have a spare marshmallow, send them Stacey's way. I'm sure she would appreciate that. Thank you, Stacey.
Wait. No. I have to tell you, because I saw these in grocery stores. Pro tip for anybody who makes s'mores.
Yeah.
They now have s'more-shaped marshmallows. They're thinner than normal.
That takes out
the
And
they're
work.
Square-shaped. Okay,
that's not
all.
Fair.
But they're not melted yet.
They're not melted yet. Okay. But they're in the shape that, like, they're optimized for s'more making.
Hmm.
Okay.
S'morming.
Hmm.
I have a non sequitur for everything, you guys.
S'mores make...
Yeah, once you smush the marshmallow,
it kind of forms.
So what happens is, like, you know when your marshmallow catches on fire on the outside and it's all gooey, but the inside's still a little cool?
Yeah.
That's
so this
just
shape.
You're bad at it.
Hey, that's Harston, do not judge.
That's true.
I don't know.
It's got a point.
S'mores. However, if you're bad at making s'mores, they have a marshmallow whose surface area is larger and overall volume is still the same, possibly even more, and you can, you know, melt the whole thing all the way through.
Wow. Since we're talking about s'mores, I was camping last week, or last weekend, and I saw a kid walking around with a waffle cone, and I was like, what's in the waffle cone? And she said, it's a s'more. The s'more inside of a waffle cone.
I'm going camping this weekend, and we are totally
That kind of sounds amazing, doesn't it?
Amazing.
It sounds really good.
I'll report back next week.
All right, cool. Keep us posted. We do this show, or Leo, he'll be back next week. He'll do this show with the gang next week, next Wednesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, 2000 UTC. And if you want to find all the information about this, we can Google. You can do it very easily. Just go to twit.tv/TWIG. There you're going to find all of your subscribe links for all the places that you can find our show. And you go there, just click those buttons down there. Maybe even go to YouTube and watch it there. Heck, we don't care. Just watch. Just listen. And all of your options are there. Plus, all of the episodes of This Week in Google, all 521 of them, can be found at twit.tv/TWIG. Big thanks to Carson for putting everything together and for the show today. As always. And thanks to you guys for watching. We'll see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye, everybody.